The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a four-game set against the Cleveland Guardians, losing 3 out of 4 in that series. They fall back down to 500 at 10-10 on the year, and they still occupy last place in the American League East. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass., is Jeremy Schilling. How are you, Jeremy?
With regards to baseball, terrible.
I would agree. Yep, I think we're all kind of feeling that. It's not been the best week, so I feel you. Where can folks find you on Twitter?
At JTSCHILL, at JTSHILL20.
Awesome. Also with us on the show from Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
You know, I'm just gonna say I have Sam Kennedy syndrome at this point. I'm just numb, and I'm used to it, and I don't know what to say. I had the Red Sox winning, I think, 3 of the 4 of these games, and it was the exact opposite. They won 1 of the 4, so wasn't a difficult pitching staff we had to face. I mean, Curry, Carrasco, Bibee, you know, is up and coming, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised, you know, with that game. But brutal, and I think it's just going to get more brutal.
Yeah, you'd feel better at least about a series split, because even then they'd still be over 500, and, you know, you'll kind of take that against a plucky team like the Guardians. But to lose 3 out of 4, especially the fashion they did, which we'll get into, obviously. But, yeah, it just makes it feel a lot worse. So, and where can folks find you on Twitter as well as some other accounts?
So my personal account is at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account, which is by far the busier of the two, at Bastards_Boston. And I have a... for the Facebook only crowd, you can find me at Terry Talks Sox on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, unfortunately, we do have to get to the good, bad, and the ugly, and there wasn't a lot of good. It was more just bad and ugly from these four games. So we're going to bring you our bottom five list. It's five players that we feel like just did not show up in this series and were a big reason why the Red Sox lost 3 out of 4. So Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who is coming in at number five?
Number five is a guy I find myself being an apologist for more often than not, but hard to apologize for this series. That's going to be Willier Abreu. Basically went 1 for 12, had 3 strikeouts, did draw 3 walks, drove in a run today, but continues to be, as Jason said in the pre-show, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde when it comes to defense. You know, you just like to see some consistency there. And last year, in a short sample size, he hit over 300 with an OBP of close to 4. Obviously, that's not who he is. But, you know, if he could be serviceable, I could see him being, you know, quietly a pretty solid contributor in the 6th or 7th spot in the lineup. It sucks that he's a lefty and we have, it seems like, nothing but lefties, but wasn't a good series for him when we're kind of looking for stability. Tyler O'Neill got hurt, so the outfield is somewhat unsettled right now, and Abreu did not do us any favors.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously part of a larger problem defensively. One for 12. I mean, they were 23 for 130 in the series, if I did my math correct, which is a 176 average across four games. I thought that I did the math wrong. I still may have done the math wrong. I stink at math, but assuming I did it correctly, that is woefully pathetic. And Abreu is right there in the middle of the patheticness. You know, somebody besides Duran with Devers and O'Neal needs to step up and be a consistent spark plug in this offense. I like his approach at the plate. It's just not, there's no results there. There's swings and misses, weak contact. I could be used talking about Abreu. I could be talking about any number of people here, but he's just in a group of people all doing a lot of the same things.
Yeah, Abreu's an interesting case because he shows flashes at times where you go, wow, okay, that's, you know, he makes a nice play. Like, you know, that line drive from Ramirez that he snagged. I mean, that was a really nice play. That's, you know, going towards a tough part of that right field, which is hard enough to play to begin with. But then the next two games, he's throwing the ball around. He's, you know, missing cutoff guys. He's booting it. And you just go, man, like, remember when we got him and Valdez in the Christian Vasquez trade and we all thought, wow, that was a steal. That was a really good deal. Like, Manuel Valdez has some pop in his bat and Abreu looks like he could be an all-around player. Now it's looking like Valdez has lost the pop in his bat. He still sucks defensively. And Abreu is so inconsistent, you just don't know if he can ever really form into a full-time big leaguer. And a lot of it has been lack of opportunity. You know, obviously our outfield is very crowded, but he has an opportunity now. With O'Neal on the IL, he should get a lot more playing time, and he's just not showing enough at the plate. I mean, it's nice that he takes walks. That's good. But I'm not seeing any pop in his bat whatsoever. And he, to me, looks like a guy that he should be able to drive the ball, and he should be able to hit for some power, and it's just not there. So I don't know what Abreu's future is with this team. I don't know if he's just going to be one of these guys that, you know, doesn't get enough playing time and doesn't flourish here, and maybe he will somewhere else. Or if this is just who he is, maybe this is why Houston gave up on him, because, yeah, he's got some flashes, but he's never going to put it all together. So he'll have a little bit more of an opportunity with O'Neal on the IL still, but he's got to play a lot better than this because they need him.
Yeah, so the play and right to save that game was unbelievable. It was also set up by, if you watch – the angle from the third base coach's box, he misaligned the route, and he was running like it was going to be sinking, almost like a sinking line drive, and it was going to go over his head. So the last minute adjustment was kind of his own doing. Not to nitpick a pretty good play, but he didn't take a good route. Like that wasn't the route to make that an easy play. He made it difficult on himself, I thought. You know, I like his swing. I think he can hit. He's short, compact to the ball. So this entire team, except for third base, left field, and center because of the contract, is wide open. It's like an open competition. And you would think while there are people hurt, somebody would step up and take hold of a spot. And no one is. Except for the catchers are both playing pretty well, especially offensively. But it blows my mind. It's like they've got the flu and like no one can come out of it. It's ridiculous.
If things go sideways, and I think they're sideways at the moment, but if it stays that way and we're out of it, this could be a 2014 type season where, you know, a guy like Mookie Betts was able to come up low pressure, kind of get himself into a rhythm. And Mookie's 2015 numbers, I don't think he made the All-Star team, but he had very good numbers, numbers you would take from any of your outfielders this year. So a guy like Abreu could certainly, you know, use this year to kind of get settled in, and you can really get a solid verdict on is he or isn't he a big leaguer, and you know, can he do it? His minor league numbers, I have them up right now. 259, that looks terrible, you know, if that's your career in the minors. I mean, that's going to, you would think he's going to be 30, 40, 50 points less than that at the major league level. But what I do love and what we have seen so far is he's got a 372 on base. He can draw some walks. His plate discipline isn't terrible. So, and then his OPS across the minors, 811. That's almost 100 points north of what the, you know, average OPS would be in Major League Baseball. So you may as well start him every day, even if it's not working, because, you know, let's see. Let's just see.
And I think to that point, he is going to get a chance, Terry, because there's two things I'm pretty certain about. And that's one, we're not going to go outside of the organization to improve this team this year. And I don't think we're going to start the clock on certain younger players in 2024. So I think they're going to sit in the minors, play at AA, AAA, because we're so far away. You know, it'd be one thing if we were, some of this lineup started to hit and all of a sudden we're 500 in August. You know, maybe you bring up a player to spark them because you think you have a chance to get in it this year, but they're not going to be running the clock on some of these young guys we're waiting on.
And that's the danger you run into. You know, for people out there who want sort of more of the, or they're okay with a transition year or developmental year, this is what you get, because sometimes the young kids just don't flourish when they come up to the big league level, at least not right away. So, you know, hopefully Abreu turns it around, but if he doesn't, that's kind of a stark reminder that, you know, not all these kids are going to hit. You know, sometimes they can perform in the minors, but they get to the show and it's just too much. So we'll see what happens with him going forward. But yeah, he's going to be an interesting one to watch. Sticking with that outfield, coming in at number four on our bottom five, Jeremy, who do we got?
So we have Rafaela, who I defended last week. And I'm not necessarily going to attack the player, but something today really concerned me. So to get to the numbers before we do that, 2 for 15, struck out 5 times, played some shortstop, you know, elite defender. We don't need to get into that. I think we can all agree on that. Superior athlete, type of guy you would think could play a couple different other sports at a really high level. I didn't have a lot of concerns because I don't really expect much from him offensively, but his body language today was terrible. He wanted to dig a hole and go in it and just sit there. I mean, we were still in the game early. I think it was 2-1. He struck out poorly, looked bad. I'm going to talk about his plate approach in a second, and he sat on the bench by himself while the rest of the team was up on the rail. The way he left the batter's box, walked to the dugout, you know, you felt for him, but at the same time, you're a big league player. And Terry mentioned maybe sending him down to the minors. I don't think that's going to happen. You've started his clock. You've paid him. It doesn't make any sense not to let him learn at this level at this point, especially if we're going to have issues anyways. His approach at the plate blows. He wants to swing every time. He has zero pitch recognition. Like today he went to swing at a ball and checked his swing, but he began his swing on a ball that should have hit him, you know? And maybe it's because it's in his head. He's just so jumpy and he's not this bad, but his approach does not afford him the opportunity to get to middle pitches and hit him, because he's constantly behind in the count, swinging at pitches that are not in the strike zone. Sometimes they don't start in the strike zone. And honestly, if I was a right-handed pitcher, I would just throw sliders off the plate and you'd get him out at best with weak contact, or he's just going to look bad and swing and miss. You know, it's really frustrating. I don't like Cassis didn't have a good week. We kept him off the list. A good week series. He struck out 7 times, 3 for 16. He did hit the home run. But at least I see him working the account, approaching each battle with a plan, you know, whether it be he knew a guy's going to pitch him outside, he's not going to try to pull the ball, he's working middle away. You know, there's a plan there. He's slumping, he's down a little bit, but I'm not overly worried about Cassis. I'm really worried about Rafaela, really worried. because the approach is trash. And that I this is where, you know, the inside information we're going to get later, because I think they're doing a documentary on this team. I'd really be interested to see what the hitting coach is saying and doing with him after games. Because if he's not listening, I don't think you send him down, but I think you send him a message and maybe lay off him entirely for a series unless you have another injury and need him.
Terry.
It's everything, all the concerns that all the prospect nerds had with him are amplified right now, and mostly around the pitch recognition that Jeremy was talking about. I said last week, when he goes into the batter's box, he doesn't have a plan. He doesn't know exactly what he's going to do, and the pitcher seems to know exactly what they're going to do with him. So it's frustrating to watch. Euclid today, I mostly had to listen to it at work, but Euclid said that, you know, it's really painful to watch him right now, and he's pressing. And he looks a lot like Jaron Duran did in 2021 when he first got called up. You know, just very, very anxious in the batter's box. And you just got to relax. You got to be more patient. I don't know if he needs to take, you know, maybe a first pitch just to get in there. But, you know, it has been good. And when he signed his contract, I mean, it just seemed to, the floor seemed to fall out from under him. So I don't know if there's pressure there or what, but that's going to look like a goofy situation by the end of the year if this kid doesn't figure it out. I just checked. He does have two options left, because I'm not sure how that works now that he's under an actual big league contract, but for this year and next year, he can be optioned back and forth if he's needed to. I'm kind of wondering, like, maybe if you do demote him, maybe send him to Portland or something. Send him a little bit further down and then just be patient on the way back up. You see that more often with pitchers than anything, but I just don't. If we find ourselves 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, we're five or six games under, I don't see any benefit at all to keeping him up here at that point.
So I again, this goes back to what I'm interested to see how the hitting coach gets in his head, because if they're purposely pitching him off the plate because they know he's going to swing and miss at it, taking a pitch is a really good idea. And it's not a long-term solution, because then you're just going to get a pounded fastball right down the middle and you're down every count. But he's down every count anyways. Like, I would love to see him bat on shoulder. And if it's 1-0, it extends to the second pitch. You take until you get a strike. And if you can get ahead in the count 2-1, you might actually see something in the middle of the plate. Because right now, he's just not, because it's that easy to pitch to him.
I mean, this kind of goes back to, I think, Terry, is the point you brought up a couple weeks ago, where when we talked about the extension and you sort of said, why was he the priority over like Tristan Casas and some other guys? But like, it really just, the larger question is, why was there such a rush to extend this kid when all you've seen from him at the big league level at that point was what, a couple of games at the end of last year when no one was really trying? And even then, it's not like he lit the world on fire. He looked okay. But they rushed to extend him, and right now, he looks like a kid who's pressing really hard. And it's probably in his head, because he's like, I got the big contract. They, you know, they have me up here. They want me playing every day. They, you know, got me changing positions. Like, I got to get in there and do something offensively. So he's out there swinging out of his ass on every pitch, because he knows that the biggest knock on him is his offense. Will the bat ever come around? And he's out there just desperately trying to prove that, like, nope, I can do it. I can hit at this level. And he's just constantly pressing. So I don't know what you do at this point, because I think no matter what, it's going to look like a bad situation. If they keep him up here and he can't hit at the big league level, then everyone's going to say, why you keep throwing him out there? He's not ready. Why did you extend him so soon? But if they send him down, like Terry said, they send him down to Double A, everyone's going to go, really? The guy you just signed to an 8-year extension, you're going to send him down to double A? And that, what's that going to do for his confidence? I mean, sure, he'll probably hit down at that level, but, you know, he's going to sit there and go, wow, I already failed. They're already kind of giving up on me. So I don't think no matter what they do, it's going to look like a good situation unless he really starts to turn it around at the big league level. And I just don't know. I mean, Jeremy, you mentioned his approach. It is bad. I mean, he's got to take some pitches. He's got to be more patient because he's out there swinging like Vlad Guerrero. And the problem is Vlad Guerrero could hit everything. This kid's not Vlad Guerrero yet. So,
well, it's an ownership created issue, right? Jason, that's the answer. They wanted to show the fan base they'd spend money. We talked about this last week. They weren't going to spend on Cassis. There's no one else really to extend right now. So they already did Bello in the offseason or the spring training. So they created the whole situation. And for that very reason, they're not going to send him down because then ownership has egg on their face. They're going to get murdered. They're going to get murdered. You force the contract a year, maybe two, maybe 3 years early, and you're already sending him down. It's not, and that's why he's not going to be this bad the whole year. I mean, he's going to get, someone's going to talk to him. He's going to at least fix his approach. He may not light the world on fire, but there's nowhere to go but up here. But it's just, it's ownership created issue. And then, and for that reason, he's not going anywhere. They're not going to give him any, they're not going to go give him at bats in a lower level.
No, it's true. They absolutely created the issue on their own. And everyone lauded them at the time. When the contract was signed, everyone said, oh, this is what we want. We want ownership acting like the Atlanta Braves and, you know, these other teams that lock up their young guys through arbitration and, you know, lock them into these long-term deals. Yeah, we want that. But difference is the Braves are good at it. And they picked the right guys to extend at the right time. They jumped on this kid too fast.
I'm not worried about the contract so much right now yet because the money doesn't kick in for like 4 years, but it still looms over him, you know? And then the timing of it, I don't remember who – I was watching the game at the office, and it might have been Uke. It might have been O'Brien. I don't remember. But after watching his body language, it seemed clear to me that he was pressing, and it seems very natural to do it in the face of the contract. Yet he's not being paid that money yet. He's just labeled as the $50 million player. So it just the whole timing of it, everything, it looks terrible right now. Terrible. But I'm not ready to give up on the contract, even though I'm sure Terry is.
You could have signed the same damn thing next year. And at this point, I'm thinking you stay the hell away from it next year after having seen this year. But real quick, so I thought this was 2014, but apparently it was 2013. Spring training, a young prospect in the Red Sox system hit .419 with a .507 on base and was hitting home runs off guys like Cliff Lee, who was still pretty good at that time. Any ideas to who that was?
Was that Bradley?
It was Bradley.
Yeah.
And I remember it because they were making, you know, all those Chuck Norris jokes, right, over the years. Well, they were doing it that spring training, but it was Jackie Bradley. They were switching out Chuck Norris with Jackie Bradley, and it was just the dude was off the charts. And then when the regular season started, he was so bad, he only played 37 games and a 189 average with a 280 on base. I wonder what his strikeouts were. He's so far down. But
I don't get so worried about rookie seasons with guys. Like, Terry's going to fact check me, Jason, so I'm going to take a stab at this knowing that he's going to go right to the Twitter fingers or Google fingers here. When Pedroia came up, I remember he was wearing some goofy number like 88 or something like that. He was not good when they brought him up as a September call-up. You know, there's a time for these guys to adjust. And so I'm just never that quick to like say it's not going to work. And I'm sure you could go through other prospects, offensive prospects, and find similar situations where, like you, Terry mentioned Duran. So, you know, one of the things I'm probably, if we're going to continue to just flounder and ultimately end up under 500 and ride out the year, there's going to be two or three guys that I'm going to keep an eye on the whole way through just to see their progression at the big league level, and he'll be number one on my list.
About Pedroia,
here it comes, here it comes.
I'm giving no stats here, Jeremy, but he was a very, very heralded prospect, you know, elite prospect, and he was viewed as, you know, a middle infielder of the future. And the interesting thing about 2007 when he came up, Alex Cora was essentially the everyday guy until he came up, and he was having one of the best years of his career. And Terry Francona had to pull Cora aside and say, listen, I know you're killing it right now, but Dustin Pedroia is going to be coming up, and he's going to have to get the majority of the playing time. So, you know, we really want you to help out here and be a mentor to him. And to Cora's credit, you know, he took it like a veteran and said, yeah, no problem. And it was bad. I mean, he had a terrible first half, and then the second half, I think that was 2008, actually. No, it was 07. That was the World Series year. And then later that year, I mean, he was having some huge moments in the World Series. So it was fun. That was such a great World Series, too. 07 gets the least amount of glory of all of them. But Ellsbury was in Double A that July, and he was up being a big contributor in the postseason. And J.D. Drew finally, you know, kind of got the fan base off his back with a big postseason. And, man, that was such a fun year from start to finish.
It was, absolutely. And that team probably doesn't get enough love because they faced Colorado in the World Series, which is just kind of like, okay, we all know how this is going to go. Like,
well, they were undefeated going into the playoffs, though. They swept every round. So true. I was a little nervous, but we swept them.
Sure did. Yep.
Pedroia hit 191 his first year in the bigs, which was like close to 40 games. I just looked it up.
That's all it was?
Yeah, 191.
That
17 for 89, and I went off the page in 89 at bats. He was absolutely terrible.
Okay. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like if Rafaela, you know, if it's just a bad stretch, and like you said, Jeremy, there's nowhere to go but up from here. So
he can't get worse.
Right. Yeah.
He can't put the ball in play. He can't get worse.
Yeah.
It's like the little league is sticking right field that shouldn't be there. I mean, it's that bad.
Yeah, and at least the defense is still there, and that's something this team desperately needs. So we'll take that at least. But, yeah, someone to definitely keep an eye on. So we've covered right field. We've covered center field. Let's now move over to left field / DH. And coming in at number three on our bottom five is Masataka Yoshida, who went 0 for 10 in the first two games and then for some reason needed 2 days off after that. I'm a Yoshida defender. I liked the signing at the time. I thought he had a good year last year. I was surprised that people were so ready to trade him away this winter, like just give up on him already. And I think I remember saying in the offseason, like, it's an adjustment for him. It's his first year playing in, you know, the American, like the MLB, different schedule. It's a little more gruesome for him, so let him adjust to it. He'll make the proper adjustments, and he'll be much better in year two. So far, it's looking like the same. He already looks exhausted. I mean, just from everything, like, and he's not even playing the field that much. He's DHing for the most part, and he's already looking like just making weak contact, making no contact sometimes. He's, you know, whiffing a lot more, keeps rolling the ball over. It's just, again, like, he hit the home run last week, but again, it's like it's just one little flash where he drives the ball and then everything else is the same. It's weak contact, it's weak grounders, and he doesn't look like the same guy. So it's really concerning. And like the fact that Cora has to give him 2 days off when you just put your best player, you know, at least so far on the IL, your second best player, or at least your big money player, might be headed for the IL because he's got a knee thing going on. You're down. You're missing a lot of guys. And that lineup they put out on Thursday was pathetic. That was a pathetic lineup. Emmanuel Valdez hitting fourth, and Yoshida still needs a day off. Like, that's the kind of game where you go, Masa, like, we need you today. Like, you got to get in there somehow because, I mean, they had Connor Wong DHing instead of Yoshida being in there. I don't get it. Like, that's just a weird – it's something weird is going on with him. And I don't know if it's Cora just doesn't trust him to stay healthy and if he's just paranoid that Yoshida's already getting tired. So, okay, let me give you the 2 days off instead of putting you back in there Thursday afternoon. But this can't continue. Like, this guy's either got to, like, get in shape and get to a point where he can be a regular contributor, or they really need to figure something out, because needing 2 days off, you know, in the middle of this week when your team is kind of struggling and, you know, kind of on the brink a little bit of, like, things are about to go sideways if we lose more guys, like, you can't suit up for a second game in a row. You've got to sit on the bench and watch your offense flounder. I mean, Jeremy, you know, I hope your numbers are right. That what they were hitting 173 or something for the series, something like that. So
176. Don't give them. Don't drop off that 0.3 of a point.
Oh damn. Yeah. Bad. My bad. Yeah. 176 for the series. At like, and you know, you're one of your more expensive players is sitting on the bench. It's just not. It's not good enough. So I'll continue to defend him. I think Yoshida can still turn it around. But like this whole days off and, you know, looking exhausted thing. He's got to fix that because it's getting ridiculous.
So my biggest thing is like the lack of hitting is contagious, right? It happens typically in the middle of the season, dog days of summer, where like you just shut down offensively for like a series or two. It happens to good teams, you know, and then when you start getting going, you'll roll for a few games and score a couple touchdowns, you know? I think that the failure to play in the back two of this series is a decision made on Tuesday night by Cora, where he probably, or coming into the ballpark Wednesday morning, he probably made the decision with the coaching staff to say, let's shut him down. They probably told him to so he could mentally reset and say, look, we're going to see you again in the Pirates series. That's how bad this is right now. I mean, if I have to see another two hopper to the first baseman, I'd say pull my hair out. Obviously, I can't do that, but it's just so frustrating. Again, going back to Rafaela, one of the things I like about Yoshida is his approach at the plate and him seemingly having a plan. And he's so bad right now. He may be going up there with a plan, but it ain't very good, and he's not executing it. So, you know, I personally, they're so bad. They got away with it with the Hauk performance, where they just didn't really need much that night. I like the idea if that's what the coaching staff decided to do. And then let's see if he comes out of it starting to hit a little bit.
Terry.
Do you guys recall the last player we gave a similar amount of money to who had never taken an at-bat in Major League Baseball? 2014. Cuban guy.
Oh, yes, I do know. He only played in AAA.
Ruzny Castillo.
Ruzny Castillo. That's right.
I'm on the verge of calling him Ruzny Yoshida for the rest of the season if this guy doesn't figure it out. Right now, he's...
I have a problem with that comparison, but I'll wait.
Right now, he's your $18 million backup DH. As Jason pointed out today, Devers and O'Neill are not in the lineup. Yoshida is on the bench. You're getting nothing from this guy. Absolutely nothing. And I thought about giving this take last week, but he probably feels like he got the shaft compared to his friends. You know, they're in bright, warm, sunny LA, World Series favorites. They were all on that WBC team. And big contributors. So they get to go contend. Ruzny's in baseball hell, which is Boston. Nobody's happy. Kenley is throwing Ruzny? Hissy fits. Am I calling him Ruzny already?
Did you just call him Ruzny?
I might have just done it.
You did it, yeah.
See, I mean, that wasn't even a conscious thought there. It just came out. But how much fun is he having right now? What kind of an environment is Boston? And that's not his fault, but it's not pretty. And I'm sure he's sending text messages and stuff to the two other guys. And it's just, I destroyed that contract. I'm like, you can spend $18 million a year on guys that you know that can play, whether it's on the pitching side or the hitting side. It was just a massive risk. And I mean, he's not going to get, nothing weird's going to happen. He's going to stay on the roster, but you're just not getting anything out of him. For one game over the weekend, he beat the allegations and it hit two balls really hard. One of them went over the fence. It ended up being the winning hit because it put us ahead and we stayed ahead. But, you know, I'm worried we're just not going to see consistency. And I talked about it on the early week show. He was, for 4 or 5 years in a row in the Japanese leagues, which granted is like 4A, he was a 450 on base guy. And, you know, if you could be 120 points less than that consistently at the major league level, I would take it. I feel like if you're on base is really good, the other categories are working themselves out and nothing's working out with Yoshida.
The Ruzney Castillo comparison was absolutely awful.
Was it though?
Ruzney never, the Red Sox were good.
Ruzney could play the outfield though.
They had outfield talent. There was never a spot for him. It didn't make sense, the Ruzney signing. It never made sense. They didn't need the player. And the reason why he never got big league at bats is because ultimately there was never a spot for him.
Well, you know,
you're just doing this thing where you're pretending like he didn't have, and I'll use your language from last episode, okay? You're just going to pretend that he didn't have a very good first half of last year, which ultimately ended up with pretty good numbers throughout the full season. You were just pretending like that didn't happen, and he's just coming over this year because he did. Now, with all that said, Terry, he stinks right now.
He does.
He absolutely stinks right now. I put him in offensive purgatory with Rafaela, Hamilton. By the way, Dahlbeck hasn't had it. He's 0 for 32. I saw that stat last night on the telecast. I didn't know if somebody, a graphics guy at Nesson in the truck, made a mistake or got paid some money to screw around. I mean, are you kidding me? Why is he getting big league at bats? So, I mean, the whole thing is the whole, like, six people in the lineup in any given night are all in, have no clue. And, you know, it's again, Bailey comes in and fixes the pitching staff. 20 in the third innings, two earned runs of the series. Where is the approach at the plate across the entire lineup? I mean, at some point, are we going to look at coaching and go, like, where's the game plan collectively? And Yoshida's falling into some bad habits, and I'd like to know why, because even when he's going bad, his approach is always pretty good, and that's really gone out the window too.
With Ruzney, the one season he was up, couldn't catch up to a 93-mile-an-hour fastball. He was just... he just couldn't get there.
It's an interesting comparison for sure.
It's going to be more relevant as we go.
Agreeing with me, by the way.
Ruzney was a minor league superstar. So, I mean, give him credit for that at least. He was the Bobby Dahlbeck of his time. He crushed it in the minors.
But getting like $10 million a year in Pawtucket. The other guys are getting, what, 50 grand?
He seemingly embraced it. I can't believe we're talking about Ruzney Castillo right now, but he seemingly embraced it, made his money, and then went off into the sunset. I don't even know what he's doing now.
And the reason I think we overreacted with Ruzney was because we just barely missed out on Jose Abreu, who one of the better Cuban hitters of the last decade. So that was the pivot. We're like, all right, we're going to go hard for this guy, and we whiffed.
And obviously, naturally so, but anytime you put a larger dollar figure next to a name, the fan base is going to immediately have their antenna up. And so if you put him as like the most heralded prospect, but didn't never gave him the money, I think you see the whole thing differently. And I think obviously the same would go for Rafaela, but you put these expectations on players when you make mistakes with contracts, and it's somewhat unfair to the player when maybe their performance doesn't meet the money, at least yet. And that's, I think, one of the issues we're facing with Rafaela right now. Again, he's not even being paid. I don't even really count the contract until probably 3-4 years from now.
Well, Rafaela is only getting...
Now, with that said, Yoshida's playing right away, and he's making money right away. So he's got his a bullseye on his back, and he needs to perform. And again, I think this was a intentional sit-down by Cora, and I'd like to see how he's going to respond to it.
Rafaela is only getting $1 million a year for the first two, and then it escalates after that. Just another thing on Yoshida here. We paid him double, essentially, what we were projected. Scott Boris is his agent. And there was some type of a deadline. I admittedly am not great when it comes to the posting system there. But Bloom went basically double the previous offer, and Boris took it instantly. And the Red Sox don't have a good relationship with Scott Boris, and he had Heyman doing hit pieces against us, and rightfully so in hindsight. But it was just the way that all went down, and all the insiders were like, oh my God, what a massive overpay for Yoshida. And that's so far, we're definitely paying for it.
Just real quick before we move on, Ruzny Castillo played 13 games in the Mexican League last year at age 35. So
how did he do?
279 with no homers.
Oh, I'll take it. Man, that's MVP in this lineup.
But yeah, he's been kicking around the Mexican League for a couple of years. I think he's now retired. There's nothing on him this year. So I think he finally hung up the cleats. But yeah, that's where he was. So good for him, I guess.
Just a guy that loved to play baseball.
Yeah.
You know, he made his money and he just played as long as he could.
Can't fault him for that.
Nope.
So we've beat up on the lineup enough, but they're not the only problem on this team. We've got a little bit of a pitching issue out of the bullpen. So coming in at number two on our bottom five, Jeremy, who do we got?
Winkowski. So in last I talked about Winkowski, he was finishing up a 2 2/3 outing against the Angels, 9 hits, 4 runs, 3 earned, and 65 pitches. So they had to shut him down for a little while. I'm interested to, I think that leaving him in for 65 pitches in that setting, I think is a problem. I know they needed to get to the end of that particular game. Let me give you the stats for this series. Pitched an inning on Monday, 2 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 25 pitches, pushed his ERA to 3.38. Pitched again the next day, which was Tuesday, an inning, 2 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, 2 walks, 26 pitches. I mean, every time he takes the ball, he's giving up multiple runs. He's had some unearned runs in there, which has kept his ERA lower than you'd expect it to be by the eyeball test, but he's been terrible. He's pitching in the eighth inning on Monday. He's pitching at the end of the game on Tuesday. It's and here's my it's like the lineup. It's contagious. Like they just can't get key outs. And Winkowski, we're going to talk about someone I'm very excited to rip into at number one slot this week. So I'm not going to, you know, go too far on Winkowski. He's pitching key innings, trying to get key outs, and he just can't do it. And when you have an offense that is anemic, the only chance you have is to get small leads and hold them, and he is just giving it up right now.
Terry.
So of all the guys we've discussed on this list, Winkowski's the guy I'm most confident that we'll figure it out more sooner than later. He did have a great appearance. I forget which game it was, but he pitched 2 innings of relief. Both happened to be in extra innings. So he had the ghost runner both times, and he got us out of both innings. Lately, though, it's been a struggle. On Monday, game one of the series, he came in to the, let's see, that was the ninth or so. gave up a single to Bo Naylor, Esteban Florial. I didn't even realize he was with the Guardians. He was a highly touted Yankees prospect for a while. Moved him to second on a sack bunt, and then Arias hit a double, and then he gave up a single before getting the final out to Rocchio. And then today, and then the very next day, a couple earned runs again. So it's been wonky, and you talk about things being contagious. I mean, Chris Martin, very up and down. He did have a couple of decent outings this series. We're going to get to Kenley in a minute, but that entire bullpen is just very unstable. And I think Winkowski might be kind of feeling a little bit more pressure than normal. Last year, no pressure at all. Martin put up a full season of video game numbers, 1.05 ERA. Kenley was very serviceable. I mean, he wasn't a top five closer, I wouldn't say, but probably somewhere in the lower top 10. And, you know, Bernardino came up, pitched some very good innings last year and is continuing to do so. This year, he's only been up for a few games, but I just think the bullpen itself is extremely unstable right now, and I think Winkowski is feeling it.
So one thing I wanted to look at is, especially with Andrew Bailey coming in and the whole Andrew Bailey pitching system, pitching school, whatever you want to call it, you know, did he change what Winkowski is doing from last year to this year? He is a little bit. So if you look at last year, Winkowski was fastball, cutter, slider. Those were the pitches he threw the most. He only threw his changeup 5% of the time. This year, he's throwing his fastball 9% less. So 2023, he threw his fastball 42% of the time. This year, it's down to 33%. And the changeup is now at 12% of the time. Last year, he only threw it 5%. So now they're trying to make him more of a fastball, slider, changeup guy. And he still mixes in the cutter every now and then. And he's got a good fastball. He's got good life on it. It touches mid-90s consistently. So is he kind of feeling the adverse effect of, you know, we want you to throw the changeup more and we want you to throw the fastball less? And is that kind of messing with him? This is something that I worry about, because, like, for some pitchers, Andrew Bailey's going to come in and he's going to make them look a lot better. Tanner Houck looks phenomenal so far. Cutter Crawford looks phenomenal so far, but there's mixed results with other guys. You know, Chris Martin, you know, he's kind of gotten back on track a little bit, but he had that weird blow up game where it was just like, we had never seen that from Chris Martin. And he was throwing different pitches. Now Winkowski, he's throwing the fastball less. He's throwing the changeup more. Is he just not really fully comfortable with that yet? That could be part of it. I also think too, it's just his usage is way up early on this year. I mean, Cora is, you know, I think Cora's doing his best. He doesn't trust a lot of guys in that bullpen right now. He's got a lot of new arms that he's not really kind of familiar with, guys like Weissert, Slayton, whatever. Kenley has been, you know, what he's been. We'll get to him in a little bit. But, like, maybe he's using Winkowski so much that it's just he's kind of burning him out early. And, you know, he's throwing a lot of pitches. There are a lot of high-stress pitches. His defense certainly isn't doing any favors. He's, you know, more guys get on base than he's probably comfortable with. So I think it's a combo of just he's in a bad situation right now. He's got a bad fielding team behind him, and he's got a manager who trusts him, but almost trusts him to a fault, because he's just like, he may not be ready to go, but you're going to get thrown out there because, you know, Cora would rather go to him than go to like Joe Jakes again or something like that. So I think Winkowski's just kind of feeling it a little bit. I think you're right about that. It's just the whole team's under a little bit of pressure right now. The bullpen certainly, and his usage is up pretty high early on. So I'm curious to see the pitch mix going forward with him. Does he continue with the fastball changeup combo, or do they let him kind of, you know, use his fastball a little bit more, get away from the changeup if it's not helping him? We'll see. I don't know, you know, if Bailey's going to be stubborn about that, or if it's, you know, a combo of them, I don't know. But this is a guy they need to get back on track, because this bullpen is very, very shaky right now. It is extremely shaky. And the bullpen was one of your strengths last year. And your rotation has been really good so far. If the bullpen can stabilize, then really you're just talking about getting the offense going and not being idiots on defense. You're not that far away from actually looking like a competent baseball team. But your bullpen keeps struggling like this. It's just going to get harder and harder. So not a good start for Winkowski so far. It's been a rough stretch for him. His whip is up over 2 now. He's just too many walks, and he's getting hit too much. And that's not something we're used to seeing from him. So another guy to keep an eye on, especially with this new pitching system and whether or not it's actually going to benefit him. So with that, we're going to round out our bottom five with the guy at the very back end of that bullpen, who I think we're all pretty quickly getting tired of. So, Terry, bring us home. Who is number one on our bottom five?
Number one is the closer, Kenley Jansen. He wasn't the closer this time around. He was the continuer because the game continued beyond the ninth. And I forget who pointed it out. It might have been O'Brien. Maybe it was Euclid. Maybe it was someone on one of the Boston stations. The dude hasn't had a clean inning yet this year. And he was kind of walking the tightrope with tons of walks, hadn't given up a hit for a while, but now the hits are coming and so are the runs. And Kenley is not taking any accountability for it, hardly. You know, he's got all these excuses. He was complaining that the balls weren't muddy enough. Apparently the bullpen ones are. The, you know, ones in the game aren't. He was unavailable, I should say, due to some back issues early on, and still continues to be a guy who just doesn't want to be there. Other than maybe Devers at one point this winter, Jansen was kind of critical about the front office. You know, he said he came here to win. That's what he thought was going to happen. And it's going to probably be another last place finish, but not a good outing at all. And it was a one run lead that he had to protect. And the Red Sox came from way back to, they were down, what was it? 6-1, 6-2, and next thing you know, it's 7-6, and I'm like, oh my God, we're gonna steal one here. And this was after a day we got shut out, which was our second or third shutout of the season. Might have actually been our fourth, actually, now that I think about it. And so the offense woke up late. Casas, Devers really came through, and Kenley comes into the game, and it's just not a comfortable feeling when you see Kenley coming out. Because like I said, he hasn't given you a clean inning yet. And things did go sideways. I'm thinking back to past closers. I mean, we've been pretty fortunate. You had Folk for a couple years. You had Papelbon for several. You had one magical year from Koji. Kimbrel was up and down. You know, he could be heart attacky at certain points. He's the only closer in the World Series era to not record the final out. But the guy, in terms of unlikability, that I think Kenley is really drifting down towards is Alfredo Aceves, if you can remember him from 2012. And he wasn't doing good. Then he was mouthing off to Bobby Valentine, which half the team was doing anyway, including the guy in the broadcast booth, Euclid, and rightfully so. But the Kenley Jansen experience for a guy who's going to probably be a first ballot Hall of Famer, the whole 2 years in Boston, you know, isn't looking good. And he'll be 37, I think, later this year. What's he going to have left in the tank when he finally gets, you know, a better destination next year?
Jeremy.
So I would say something like, if I'm 37 years old and I have one, maybe 2 years of being able to pitch in late inning situations, I'd want, if I was looking at this roster, to be moved to a contender. The problem with that is he took the money last year when he should have known or did know that that roster was terrible too. So he takes the money. It's good enough for him last year. now he's got a problem and he wants to go somewhere else and it's the Red Sox obligation to put him in that situation. How about take less money and go to a competitor last year? Then, given all that, you don't get yourself in shape. So you come into spring training and you're not right and you're not ramping up and you're not pitching enough. It's just incredibly frustrating, and I can't stand the player. And it seemingly happened overnight for me. Now, I think I wrote down he has a 2.7 ERA after the inning the other night, because he was walking everybody, but he wasn't getting hits, and then he'd get weak contact and he'd get out of the jams. Well, I think we kind of know why he wasn't in the strike zone, because when he is, it's laser beams all over the field. So, you know, maybe he knows his stuff's not good right now and he's nibbling at the edges and he's not hitting them. And then now, instead of nibbling at the edges and missing away, nibbling at the edges, they kind of leak over the plate. They're getting absolutely rifled all over the park. It just, I wouldn't mind the performance if he came in prepared for the season and some of the off the field off season stuff didn't happen. But when you put it all together, this player becomes so unlikable right away.
You said, Terry, that he reminded you of Alfredo Aceves. I put him more in the Eric Gagne category of just player that I hate that, you know, had a great career and came here and just absolutely sucked. And Jansen didn't suck last year, but this year it's just been a complete 180, and it's, you know, it's either he's complaining about his back or some other ailment, or he's complaining about the balls. Oh, the balls aren't scuffed up enough and I can't get a good grip on them. And, you know, that's why I go in there and blow saves all the time. It's just the guy has an excuse for everything. He clearly does not want to be here, from all his comments about ownership, front office, not doing enough. You know, he knew his name came up in trade talks his offseason. He wasn't happy about it. But in reality, he was probably sitting there wishing, like, please, dear God, trade me somewhere. He was probably just upset that they ended up not trading him. He's become super unlikable. And it's just, it's one of those things that, like, I don't know how soon you can make a move like that, but they've got to find a new home for him, because it's just going to fester, that feeling of just him not wanting to be there, him just, you know, just sludging his way out onto the mound and just blowing save after save. I mean, again, like when he came into that game, you knew it was going to happen. You just knew it. You're like, there's no way this is going to go cleanly. There's just no way. And if he's completely gone in terms of like trust, like if you can't trust him in high leverage situations, then what is he still doing here? I mean, seriously, what is he still doing here? So I'm done with it. I'm done with the Kenley experience. He was good last year, but he's not even right for this team this year, the way they're going. I mean, he's not going to get a ton of save opportunities to begin with. And I don't know. It's at the point now where it's like, find a team where, yeah, you know, that's contending, that could use a closer or something like that, and make a move and just, you know, whatever. Make Slayton your new closer, make Martin the new closer, and, you know, until maybe you have to deal him later on too. But I'd rather they do that and do it quickly, because I feel like it's just, he can't be good for that clubhouse. I don't think the manager likes him. I don't think he likes the manager. I don't think he likes anything about being here anymore. So this team needs a lot of things to go right if they're going to start to turn it around. And I think having a disgruntled 37-year-old closer who always has something to complain about is not going to help. And you've got a lot of young guys on this team, mostly offensive players, but you got some young pitchers too that are sitting in that bullpen with him. And it's like, what's the mood like out there? You know, it can't be comfortable for those guys, because they all know it, you know, if we can see it, they certainly see it. So I don't like that influence being brought in either. It's just the whole situation all around is just bad.
I would not reward him by trading him to a contender. I'd say I'm dead serious on this, because you set a precedent for guys in similarly situated parts of their career with expiring contracts, because he's making a lot of money. I'd say send him to the Marlins, but then he'd just party on South Beach, and that would piss me off more. So I honestly would find the worst cold weather, wet city I could find that would take him. I'd pay a salary and just send him there and go, this is what you get. And anybody else that's going to come up and complain, we'll do the same thing to you. So we're paying you. Go play the game. We paid you to play and go be a professional. It's really not a difficult concept in my mind. Again, he took the money last year. He chose Boston last year. The roster was terrible last year. You can't have your cake and eat it too. It's not the way it works. And if you're the type of organization that gets pushed around, you'll get pushed around again.
So I think Jansen for Breslow was really where he either passed or failed as an executive. Like, there were avenues to trade Kenley Jansen. I really believe that, you know, whether it was simply just offloading the money and maybe the prospect package wasn't great. It sounds like they wanted prospects and that was ultimately why it didn't go through. But not getting rid of him was a big time failure to execute on Breslow's part. You can say what you want about the money and him being handcuffed and not having money to spend, and that's absolutely true. But there's just not many spots where Breslow really shined this winter. You know, he brought in Andrew Bailey. That's obviously the brightest thing, but that was rumored before even Breslow got here. Like, he was highly coveted by the front office in general. And Justin Slayton, great pickup in the Rule 5. That's how we got Garrett Whitlock. So it's just kind of frustrating. It'll be interesting to see if he gets the Aroldis Chapman treatment, like what happened in New York. You know, send him down to the eighth inning, then the seventh, see how he handles it. Chapman didn't handle it well, and he's a punk, and apparently he just got suspended for getting tossed in Pittsburgh. So we're about to face them, so I guess we won't see him. But before we go, I had a tweet yesterday, and it's a hypothetical. I said, if Kenley Jansen is your literal coworker in your workplace, what is he complaining about today? I'll save the best for last, but here are some of the complaints they thought he would have. Randall says how late he got called in. Another guy says, why are people still coming in? Don't they know we close in an hour? The coffee is too old and the donuts are stale. Another guy says, somebody keeps drinking his Diet Coke. Everybody knows he can't do his job without his Diet Coke. And then the best one I thought was, seeing the boss's wife around the office again with a brand new Prada bag and Louboutins, and meanwhile, the essentials for office work continue to deteriorate. So those were the best ones in that thread. In my profession, road work is like, you know, what I hate, because, you know, I drive a truck and it, you know, I don't hit my spots when I'm jammed up in that. So, but yeah, it hasn't been fun. And, you know, it's one of the bigger aspects of the clown show this year. So we'll see what further chapters emerge from it.
Where would we be without Hauk and Duran? Really, the lone consistent, you know, bright spots right now.
I'm just going to throw it out there right now. Duran's not going to get an extension because he's controllable through age 32. And if he's a speed guy, that's one of the first things a player loses. So I don't know what the urgency is going to be to give him an extension. You know, he's a late bloomer. I don't think he's going to be untouchable in July. I really don't. And you're looking at trade chips. Kenley certainly isn't going to be one, not of significant value. Another guy, Connor Wong, I think could be in high demand as well. And one of the reasons I think Duran could be moved, in addition to being the biggest trade chip and giving you your biggest haul, is you got nothing but lefties in the pipeline. Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal, all lefties. you're not going to have eight lefties in your lineup here in 2 or 3 years. So, and I'll be pissed. I'm the biggest Duran guy on this podcast. Like the way he can impact a game, nobody else on this lineup can do it in as many ways as he can. So I just...
Rafaela starts putting the ball in play, he could be a right-handed version of that.
He could. He's got wheels. He gets around the bases, and he's actually a better defender. But
they're so far away, I wouldn't have anybody that's untouchable.
Teal, if he tears the cover off the ball, he could be up this year, I think. He'll be up in September either way. But
long, he'll be up. But again, I don't know that they want to start his clock.
Well, I think... at least a couple of those guys are going to get extensions like Rafaela did anyway. So, but we'll see. We'll see. But I have a feeling Duran's going to be in extremely high demand.
I mean, Duran is certainly a player that other teams are going to call about and exactly for the reasons you said, they know the outfield situation and they know the pipeline situation. So they're going to call and say, look, You can't keep this guy. You don't have room for him. So here's a package of prospects. We know how much you love your prospects. So here's a package of our whatever, a couple of our top 15, you know, top 20 guys, whatever. And it's going to be hard for Breslow to say no to that, especially if the team continues to go sideways like this and goes under 500 and stays in last place for too long. So it's tough. It's tough to be talking like selling off and trade deadline stuff on April 18th, April 19th. But here we are. It's just, you know, it's just the way it's going. And this series was ugly and didn't help to dissuade those notions. So
breaking news. Do we have a sounder?
No,
we do not, unfortunately, but
Red Sox acquire right-hander Vladimir Gutierrez from Brewers for cash considerations.
Yep. Cash considerations.
So this guy stinks. I saw this tweet come down while we were recording. Yeah, he's a 31-year-old. He was with the Marlins to start the year. They DFA'd him. Milwaukee picked him up, and then they just gave him away for cash. He can start. He is stretched out. He can be a starter, but his numbers are not good. He's got like an ERA over 5 for his career as a starter. He's a hard thrower, but other than that, there's really not much to him. If the Reds don't want you, you stink. So
Brewers.
Yeah. Or Brewers, too. Yeah, yeah.
Because yeah, he was with reading, the Reds. I was just reading the news. I don't take a position.
And yeah. that's a big red flag if the Brewers can't fix you, because they're one of the top pitching programs in MLB. So
yeah. So another journeyman that the Red Sox have picked up. So I'm not expecting a ton, but yeah, that did just come down. So with that, we will wrap things up. Keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We'll be predicting the Pirates series coming up this weekend, and also keep an eye out for another episode of Clown Takes coming your way. So fun weekend of shows ahead and a fun weekend series against a pretty good Pirates team as well. So everyone enjoy it. Have a good weekend, and we will see you soon. Take care.